You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
We are now going to make our way outside for a 10:30 start to the service in the area that has been marked off or spreading across the car park. The children will be revealing a new banner. They're teed up to do that already. Dylan will come too. He's our new musician, Dylan Carlson, who's sitting in the front. He'll be coming to join us. We can have a sing because we're outside, not inside. It's inside singing that's forbidden. But you will need to wear your mask. And Mary is armed with a camera for taking a few photos. This part of the service will take 5 minutes. Would you please make your way outside? It's now time to begin our service, and we've got a returning face to light the chalice today. I'd like to invite Chris to come up to do it now. We light this chalice, spark of the original fire of creation, to remind us that we are all on this planet, the furred, the feathered, the finned, and the scaled, along with the featherless bipeds. We're all made of the same star stuff, and all share a common destiny. We all share the same hopes of a life free from harm and suffering, and the same aspirations of happiness, love, and flourishing. Being able to express our own unique natures and capacities as best we may. We are just that many diverse perspectives from which the whole is seen and experienced, and we're inextricably intertwined, interconnected, and interdependent. And that is good. It is our tradition to share the significant events in our spiritual lives in an open forum of worship. I invite you now to deepen and bind that relationship with one another by sharing with us any recent event that's been significant in your spiritual life, and to mark that sharing by lighting a candle from our chalice. This is not the time for comment or response, but one of offering an outline, a headline even. You're welcome, of course, to light a candle in silence without saying anything. You can still take part silent in the widening circle of compassion by listening with an open heart and mind. After the service, during coffee hour, is the time in which people are usually ready to have a conversation about their story. I open our worship space for joys and concerns, and I will light the first candle today. I light that candle for the little gathering we had at, as is our custom, the last candle is to represent those joys and concerns that remain silent in our hearts. We're going to have a little prayer, and it's going to start with the G word. I use the word God, conscious of the fact that there are many who would find it objectionable, some because it sounds theist, and some because they may find my casual use of the word a bit shallow. For all sorts of reasons, people can be touchy about the word, but in my view, there is no ultimate authority or definition. The word is yours or mine to make of it and hold or discard it as we will. God is a sort of shorthand password, an inconclusive folk word, a signpost, a catalyst, a spark, a stepping stone. A simple makeshift handle, a simple robust word used lightly and loosely, or as devoutly or deeply as we might feel. It's a bridge, a way to break free from the material reductionist sort of world, just for a moment or two, maybe a day or two, or for what's left of a lifetime. You may like to lower your eyes or even close them. God, help us to change ourselves and to change the world, to know the need for it, to deal with the pain of it, to feel the joy of it, to undertake the journey without necessarily understanding the destination, the art of gentle resolution. And we'll now have a minute's silence before Dylan plays the interlude, "Who'll Stop the Rain." I'll sound the bell at the end of the minute's silence. Thank you, Dylan. And one of the disadvantages of a church gig is you don't get the applause until the end. But I'm sure that was very much appreciated. You've got a wonderful, strong voice. And the spot on the theme for today. It's lovely. I'm now going to invite Margie to come and read a manifesto, and also if you'd like to introduce it as well, Margie.
The Festival of Climate Action at Tatanyanga began with school's climate strike number 4 on Friday, continued with conversations on Saturday and faith-based action on Sunday. Groups as diverse as Trees for Life, the Conservation Council of Australia, Extinction Rebellion, the Australian Youth Climate Coalition, and the Australian Religious Response to Climate Change and Sustainable Prosperity are all participating. They have different ideas, different styles, different politics, different focus, but there are things that they are united on. This is the manifesto of the festival. The scale and pace of change to our climate has almost no precedent. The last time CO2 was this high in our atmosphere was 2 million years ago, when rich forests covered the Antarctic. Immediate, deep, and sustained change is needed. To do this, we need everyone, old and young, people of faith, parents, business leaders, politicians, artists, you. The latest report from the world's leading climate scientists is clear. There is still hope. There is still a narrow path to avoid a climate catastrophe, but only if we act fast. From now on, every fraction of a degree matters. Every tonne of carbon matters. Every day matters. Every choice matters. The decisions we take and the actions we make today will resonate for centuries. The next few years will be the most consequential in human history. What we do with it is up to each of us. In the lead up to the COP26 climate conference in Glasgow, come along to learn what you can do, be inspired, and connect with others who want to make a difference. We choose to come together because we can, on behalf of all those in isolation throughout the country and the world. And we choose to come together because we must.
Thank you. The slide that I've got up was attached to a BBC Future article, and it was written by a climate scientist, and he pointed out that the COVID shutdown, I mean, that was our response to COVID, was to just shut everything, shut an awful lot down, was immediate. There was about a 7% reduction in carbon emissions. However, by 2030, that won't be very significant at all. It'll represent possibly 0.1% of the change. Most of the changes are due to the actual things that we need to put into place to reduce our carbon emissions. Not just a knee-jerk reaction to a particular crisis. It's a blip, and it's not very significant. It's not going to save us big time.
Oh,
The religions of Australia have a shared sense of moral purpose on climate change. Each of our diverse traditions has a common concern for the world and a deep reverence for life. We strongly acknowledge the interdependent relationship between our welfare and that of the planet. We recognise the threat posed by human-induced climate change. While celebrating the uniqueness of our different traditions, we stand together in working for an ecologically and socially sustainable future. Now, the Australian religious response to climate change is a multi-faith, member-based organisation of people from around Australia who are committed to taking action. Tejapala Rawls is a community organiser for the ARRC. He's a climate activist. He's a Buddhist. He's a stand-up comedian. He writes letters to us. Just before the weekend, he sent this to our admin secretary, and I like his style. There are a few things you may wish to know before Sunday and Monday's actions. First, we have some amazing numbers. You may wish to use these on social media, if you happen to contact the media at all. There are 388 actions worldwide so far. People are involved from 39 countries. Of these actions, 134 are in Australia. 14 are on Monday outside federal politicians' offices, but 120 of them are in places of worship or faith communities on Sunday, that's today. These are spread across every state and territory. What this means is that whatever media coverage we can get, we've already succeeded in showing that faith communities can and will mobilise for serious climate action. I'm so proud to be part of this with you. Well, if you're putting up a banner for Sunday, he says, we have a plea. Could you keep it up till November the 12th? That's when the COP26 in Glasgow ends. It would really help to have as many as possible up till then. I recognise for most people this is a last-minute request, and I apologise for that. No problem if you can't. He comes across as a really reasonable chap. COP, by the way, means Conference of the Parties, and the 26 stands for the fact it's happened for the 26th year in a row. When it started 26 years ago, it was real fringe stuff. But now, it's mainstream. It's on the front of every paper. The good news is our Prime Minister is going to go. Now, even a month ago, that didn't seem very likely. Someone would have been delegated, of course, but what message does that send? Basically, all politicians, no matter what party they belong to, need help, our help, in making up their tiny minds about where they stand. And we have a diversity of concerns. I might get my knickers in a twist over mass migrations. I have friends who are more interested in justice for poor people. Insulation, heating and cooling are currently not requirements for social housing in Australia. But back to our Kiwi friend. He is canny about party politics and has some advice, which I'll quote verbatim. A word about what we're asking for when it comes to a target for 2030. There's been considerable and careful thought as to how to ask for something that's within the realms of the possible politically, while still being sufficiently in line with the science so as not to be too late. This is not easy to get right. And this is why, after months of work, the unified ask of the climate movement is for a commitment from the federal government and the major parties for a national plan to slash climate pollution this decade, with strong targets that minimum match our key allies, the United Kingdom, United States of America, and trading partners like the EU. These targets happen to be about 50% by 2030, that's the USA, UK 68%, compared with Australia's current target of 26 to 28% by 2030. However, if you're talking to the media, it's more effective not to name a super specific number. What we need to say is that we need to be in the right range, and the right range can be seen by what our major trading partners and allies are pledging. In other words, it softens it just a bit. But if you think about it, it's still making the point that it needs to be urgent. Anyway, he ends up, that's from me. Thank you so much to each one of you for organising an action. The day starts in Fiji, where churches in Suva will unfurl banners. It's certainly very fitting that things should kick off in the Pacific. With much appreciation indeed, Teacher Pala. That's got to be a Maori name, doesn't it? Well, it certainly is fitting. An Australian think tank predicts that at least 1.2 billion people could be displaced by climate-related events by the year 2050. The Global Compact on Safe, Orderly and Regular Migration, adopted by the UN in 2018, clearly states that one of the factors causing large-scale movements of people is the adverse impacts of climate change. Natural disasters, desertification, land degradation, drought, rising sea levels. For migrants who are forced to leave the countries of origin due to environmental degradation, the compact clearly states governments should work to protect climate refugees in the countries of their arrival by devising planned relocation and visa options if adaptation and return is not possible in their countries of origin. And so far, the Pacific people trying to immigrate have hit solid legal walls. One of the reasons, of course, is a lack of clear definition of climate refugees and the absence of organisations and institutions to address and clarify the issue. Climate refugees are not covered by the 1951 Convention relating to the status of refugees. That was for people with a well-founded fear of persecution on racial, religious or other grounds, nor are they eligible for protection under the Convention. Official data on climate refugees is virtually non-existent, and that is why they're called the forgotten victims of climate change. Now, apart from many ways in which we might respond to issues and politics, there are many ways which you are already contributing to mitigating climate change. Now, I'm not here today to teach you to suck eggs about renewables, recycling, reducing your energy costs in the home, or restructuring your investments. And we're certainly not all in a position to contribute like this chap. You recognise him? He's a Swedish millionaire, Johan Eliasch, and he purchased 400,000 acres in the Amazon rainforest from a logging company. It cost him $14 million, and the sole purpose for the purchase was for its preservation. Now, that's, I found, a bit more impressive than billionaires racing into space. One of the members of the royal family had a go at them. Which one was that? Right, okay. Now, I'm not sure, but however wasteful we think that is, even with this business of putting a 90-year up into space, there is some inspiration to be gained. Did you hear the response of 90-year-old William Shatner on his return from space? I have a video clip here from CNN that encapsulates his thoughts.
William Shatner, back on Earth after hitching a ride aboard Blue Origin, the rocket company owned by Jeff Bezos. This is the moment that the Star Trek legend, the original Captain Kirk, experienced zero gravity after setting a new record as the oldest person in space at 90 years young. And it is what he said when he came back down that made me want to invite him on the show. Listen to this.
What you have given me is the most profound experience I can imagine. I'm so filled with emotion about what just happened. I just, it's extraordinary, This is life, and that's that. And it's in an instant, you go, whoa, that's death. That's what I saw.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Wow. I am overwhelmed.
All these years as an actor, and maybe his most powerful moment on screen came when he wasn't acting at all. William Shatner joins us on Primetime. Congratulations, and it's good to have you.
Thank you. I watch you all the time. You're a wonderful, wonderful commentator. It's a joy to hear you, and I'm so glad to be on your program. You know, you're perforce, you need to talk about the dark things that are happening, the dramatic things that can affect us all. Here I am, adding to your darkness. I wish I could bring a message of lightness to leaven the terrible news you keep announcing, because it is terrible news, the way the country is being torn asunder. And there's another even more important fact that moved me to tears, because when I saw the bright blue covering of Earth that's only 50 miles wide, and we plunged through it at 2,500 miles an hour, broke through it, and then all of a sudden, like a punch in the face, there was the blackness of space, and none of the mystery of the twinkling stars, the galaxies, just pure blackness, because the sun was in my face and the window, and whatever the reasons were. Space is cold and ominous and ugly, and it really threatens death. There's death there. And you look down, and there's this warm, nurturing planet. We've all heard it's cliche now, vulnerable and fragile and all that kind of thing. But it's even more than that. That's death up there and life down here. And between the two, ruining this planet as we are, we're on the verge to bring you the good news that we're at the tipping point. We haven't got time to wait 30 years and argue about a few billion dollars, which we should, how much should we invest in global warming? We're there. And so all these terrible things happening in the body politic is merely a hesitation before we all, I mean, it's just terrible. And I wish I had better news and more entertainment and jokes to tell you. But I was moved to tears by what I saw, and I come back filled with, overwhelmed by sadness and empathy for this beautiful thing we call Earth.
But I think that there is a promise.
Now, I don't think we need to listen to the whole thing. I actually had a snip organized, but it didn't work on this computer. It didn't work on mine. So you had a little bit of the commentator there. But I think you'll agree that he definitely had a spiritual experience in his little 10 minutes in space. And he makes it pretty clear that there is no planet B. It's this billionaire idea that you can get rich people together and then restart up again on another planet is the stuff of science fiction. He devoted his life to fiction, but he's ended up in a much more realistic place. And that's basically where I'd like to end today. It's with that feeling that life here is incredibly precious and that we must do what we can to protect it. Now, we reach the time of the service where we share notices, and I have three related to the topic of the day. This is the first one. A talk about sustainable prosperity. I think they had sessions yesterday, but they're repeating one today. And it's opposing the idea that we can't afford to do anything about climate change. It very much takes the line, well, we can't afford not to do something about climate change. And this is the basic argument. Deficits do matter, but not in the way that we've been taught to believe. We've been told that social security and health spending are pushing us into crisis. We're told that Australia could end up like Greece and that deficits will burden future generations. But these are myths, because deficits have happened forever. They can be used for good or bad. They can enrich a small segment of the population, driving income and wealth inequality to new heights, leaving millions behind. Or they can fund unjust wars that destabilise the world and cost billions of lives. Does this sound familiar? Or they can be used to sustain life and build a more just economy that works for the many and not for the few. Think about the New Deal. In fact, most of our infrastructure in Australia was on loans and deficits. It's two-edged sword. It's not simple. And they unpack those ideas. Thank you very much, Margie. That's exactly what we should be. We can't do everything. None of us can do everything. But what each of us can do is what we have time for, what we have energy for, and what we have passion for. And I think that is really important. Now, the end of the service is going to be a little different today, and I'm going to invite Dylan to come and do the postlude now, and the Sunday Club people will arrive to give us a brief show and tell about their activities today. This is Opportunities by Pete Murray. I'm going to invite you to come and tell us what you were doing in Sunday Club today.
In Sunday Club today, we talked about how we know things. How do we know? We thought of four different ways you can find out knowledge, and they were language, perception, emotion, and logic. We each got given a question which we had to answer and say how we knew the answer. The questions were,
if I have $1 and I spend 50 cents, how much is left?
Our perception, I didn't pick that word up. It's just seeing it for yourself, is that right?
Yeah.
Is that perception?
Yeah, right. And or smelling it or stuff.
Or feeling it. Touching it or smelling it or
testing it for yourself. My question. Wait, I haven't said mine. And mine was how stars made, and I actually can't remember because it's been in ages since I heard it. But I know I knew it because of language. But I can't actually remember. So yeah.
I remember.
Thank you.
And that brings our service to a conclusion. I would like to thank the Sunday Club for their wonderful report today on activities.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.